developed a suite of tools that now have made it into the hands of local law enforcement in this country are most certainly trained on those activists and their supporters.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for being with us, Jeremy Scahill, co-founder of The Intercept, where his most recent article is headlined, Mike Pence Will Be the Most Powerful Christian Supremacist in U.S. History. That does it for today's show. We'll be celebrating Democracy Now!'s 20th anniversary with Harry Belafonte, Noam Chomsky, Patti Smith, and more this December 5th in New York City. Visit democracynow.org for details. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills. I'm Juan Gonzalez. Thank you for listening.
This is KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's 7:59. It's Monday, November 21st, 2016. Portland area weather. Showers likely, mainly before 10 this morning. Mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high near 53. Coming up next at 8 on More Talk Radio. Cecil and Celeste confront the fear and panic that have set in since the election of Donald Trump at 9 o'clock on the Old Mole Variety Hour. They have post-election analysis focusing on immigration and farm workers, labor, and Trump's nomination of Jeff Sessions for Attorney General. Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia at 10. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, host Barbara discusses what Portland can do to ensure more trees are included in affordable redevelopment projects. And at 11 on Radio Zine, it's On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, How the Left Must Fight Back, Bernie Sanders, Water Protectors, and Student Walkouts. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. It's 8 o'clock. More Talk Radio is next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Aftermath, part of the Brown Paper series produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs November 28th at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. In Mary Burrell's 1919 one-act, John Thornton, a young black soldier who has served his country in World War I, comes home to rural South Carolina. His homecoming is disrupted when he learns that someone close to him has been lynched by a white mob. Again, that's Aftermath, produced by Triangle Productions, November 28th at 7 p.m. at The Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey in Portland. Based on the 80s cult classic film Flash Gordon, Flash is Portland's premier rock opera parody, complete with a live rock band, Mercury Rising, formed at the School of Rock. Again, that's the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey, 126 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Today is Monday, November 21st, and you are listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.fm. This is More Talk Radio, and I am Cecil Prescott. We greet you this morning. Those of you who have been listening to the program prior to this, her discussion about the results of the election of a new president in the United States. Those of you who have been aware and who hasn't of the last couple of weeks know that people have been talking and talking and sharing and marching and becoming more active as they respond to the election of a new president in the United States. This morning, we invite you to do a couple of things. One, remember to breathe. Deep breath in and out. Hopefully that will settle you to a beginning of a discussion on where do we go from here. Much of the conversation in the national media and also local media has been filled with comments and speculations. But what are the things that we can do to challenge and to correct what many perceived are terrible directions our country is heading towards? So first of all, we need to discuss what has happened in a historical context. What are the actual duties and responsibilities and powers of a president? What are the checks and balances that are offered both within the Constitution and by common reason and sense? What are the results of the impact of a new president on the economy, international relations? What about the Congress? What about the Supreme Court? What about all the federal judges that the president, in consultation with the Congress, will be involved with? These are questions that we need to discuss. So I invite you to join us. Maybe one with how are you doing a couple of weeks after the election of the president, of a new president, and two, what are things that we might do to change things as they are. Let me give you our phone numbers because that might be helpful for a discussion. So you may call us at 503-231-8187 or we have a Gmail account, so that is moretalkradio@gmail.com. And those are two ways in which you can participate in our conversation. We shall have, we're waiting actually for a guest to arrive in the studio, as well as Celeste, who is here presently.
Yay.
Yay. Yeah,
I was laughing because I was listening to you talk about breathe in and out and the whole concept of getting ready to kind of have a political discussion. And you can tell that this is a unique situation in history because not only do you find articles in the newspaper and electronic print, rather electronic press, speaking really pointedly about how to get along after this election. But I'm sure in some people's work spaces, there's statements as well, because in places that have either a large amount of folk moving in and out or have political affiliations, there's a statement of refrain from discussions, heated, passionate discussions, loud discussions, any kind of discussions wherein somebody might be offended because they voted opposite. So, you know, that I find really interesting. But to get to kind of the meat of the situation. But
before you continue, because I just wanted to add something about the political conversation. So it seems at least that those who were allowed to vote or votes were counted.
That's debatable.
It seems that in terms of the political divide, it seems pretty even. So you have as many people who voted, or just about, you know, give or take 1.5 million votes, but 48-47 it's a pretty divided populace. And I think part of the challenge I certainly have, and maybe other people have, is that we have a tendency just to talk to the 50% that voted for with us.
Same way we voted, yes.
And not realizing that on the opposite, and depending on which side of the political field you are on, that people are just as heated, just as passionate. So one side is grieving and the other side is rejoicing. It's sort of like two different societies.
That's true. But one of the things that I find really interesting in terms of trying to have a discussion and relate to people who may have voted opposite the folks that I generally hang with that I'm aware have voted, because I believe there were a lot of secret Trump voters myself. I think it's really curious to find out what their expectations are, because I believe putting so much faith in Trump himself, because it wasn't necessarily the Republican Party, but Trump per se, at least as the votes seem to indicate, that I want to know what they're thinking, what their expectations are, and are they really savvy as to the way that government actually works and the corporate influence over government works, mm-hmm. and the international influence over the way our government works. I wonder if they're really being savvy and informed, because, I feel that they need to be aware that just because it was said does not mean it will be done, because there's been backpedaling already in a lot of the areas promised by our presumptive President Trump. And I know that for many people who voted for Obama in both elections, there was a lot of frustration and even anger because he didn't do what he said he would do. And me thinking, well, how could he when he doesn't necessarily own the government? He does not necessarily own the process. He doesn't own big business that influences the process, regardless of whether they funded him or not. And the fact that it's big government, big business that runs this country more so, is significant. And people want to talk about that as well. So I'm thinking, okay, you're going to have a whole bunch of angry folk if you don't do what everybody expects you to, new presumptive President Trump. So I'm curious about what people who may have voted for Trump have to say, how they expect to be done, because they will soon join our masses, I believe. That's how I feel anyway. So now we filled up our buffers because we touched on something which is sensitive to the community. So let's get to our first caller. Good morning, Sheila. You're on the air.
Good morning. Well, I'm not going to go in the direction I think you want. As I watch our so-called presumptive president appoint people to his cabinet and his advisors, I'm terribly concerned about living in this country. I think the people that voted for Trump are going to have a very rude awakening when they start seeing that any protests are treated as though the people that are protesting the Dakota Pipeline are experiencing now. And if you listen to you were listening to Democracy Now, you hear what I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm planning on moving to Mexico. I really don't want to stay in this country the way I see it going, and it's very fearful. I'm a senior. I'm an older senior, and I'm hoping that I can get a group of people who also are interested in moving down to Mexico. You know, I believe it was the Canadian consulate, their website went down because when Trump won,
right,
there were so many people. Well, I don't think Canada is going to be the place for me, but I'm really seriously planning on leaving the country.
So it's interesting to hear that, and I smile as you talk about moving to Mexico, because I'm wondering whether you're going to do it before the wall is built or afterwards.
I think I'll probably do it before, because I think that things are going to get to a point where it's going to be hard to leave this country.
So what about those who are unable to leave the country?
I don't know. I think they're going to suffer. I think this country is in for a lot of suffering, a lot of fear, a lot of repression. A lot of repression.
So you said you were an older woman. So can you compare this to any time prior to this? Because I think it might be interesting to have people who might not have a historical perspective. So in your lifetime, looking at
I'm looking at Nazi Germany.
So you see a comparison
to I'm also of Jewish heritage.
Okay.
With the old people and the Jews. I mean, the Muslims are going to get it before the Jews. But when I look at the people that Trump is appointing or wanting to appoint, there are a lot of anti-Semites, white supremacists.
Yes.
I don't see a good future in this country for old people, for minorities. I think it's going to be horrible. And I mean, Trump to me is another Nazi.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your calling. In a sense, you kind of did go in a direction that I'm looking for, because I'm also looking for people's responses, what they plan to do. And so what I've heard you say is similar to what I've heard a lot of people across economic and racial and social lines, educational lines, just across the spectrum. And so thank you very much for your call, Sheila.
You're welcome.
One of the things, and I'm hoping that when our guest gets here, we can unpack this a little bit more, and you'll understand why I'm saving that tidbit for him. But I'm really curious as to what kinds of concerns that people who are younger, who might find themselves on the more conservative end of the spectrum, perhaps even more so than other listeners and callers who have called at other times and spoken about the whole Trump scenario, how you feel, how you plan to cope. There's concern that we may be losing workforce if we start some of the mass deportations, for example, which I started chuckling at because I'm thinking, well, now, do you even give any thought to the hundreds to thousands of people that that farmers, especially corporate farmers, sometimes will do when they go across the border and pick up undocumented workers to come in and help move their crops? Well, that means they're going to pay Americans more. Are they going to be willing to do that? And sure enough, you find a study that says the same thing. So there are going to be forces pushing back against the thought of mass deportations, whether they are aimed at criminals or not. There's going to be a lot of pushback against building a wall, because that'll make it harder for the agriculture business to get cheap labor, because you know that's what American capitalism wants, free or cheap labor. Well, let's go to our next caller. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good show. When I first heard Trump was going to be the president, I couldn't listen to the radio for several days. And then when I started listening again, I don't have TV, so I just rely on KBOO and NPR and look around in other places. But then when I heard all the people that he was appointing, you know, I had this idea that Trump just wanted to be president. That was his dream since the 80s, and he really didn't have any ideas of his own, which he still may not, but he's surrounding himself by white nationalists, creepy people, and I guess, I can't remember his name, Blackwater.
You're talking about not Bannon, but...
Prince.
I want to say new chief of security.
Yeah, it's just one spooky person after another. Then finally we hear he might have Mitt Romney as Secretary of State.
Because Mitt's got to stay in it. Mitt wasn't happy at first, but he's got to stay engaged. So therefore.
And anyway, you know, right now I happen to be entering my retirement, and I could have taken. Not my Social Security, but my pension in a lump sum, and I was advocating for it because I didn't like the looks of the future. And my landlords, oh, don't worry about it. We all get panicky at times like this, but I think this is a especially scary time, especially like what we just saw in North Dakota last night.
Yes.
Shooting old people with water cannons in freezing weather.
Yes.
And, you know, I really criticize NPR a lot because they cover stories just a little bit, and they sugarcoat everything, and they don't do, you know, and sometimes they don't cover things until they absolutely have to.
So let me ask you, because you mentioned your concern about the future. You and the previous caller are older, and I'm wondering if you have any sense of comparison to other times in our nation's history, and or any suggestion for younger people who might not know what to do?
Yeah, I can't remember a time in my life to compare it to. The time of white nationalism, Father something, was it Hannigan?
Father, yes, in the 30s in the U.S.
Uh-huh. That time in the 30s, the extreme fight against communism, socialism. So I think we're moving towards a real polarized time, and I'm afraid, you know, having Jeff Sessions, he's denounced marijuana. So I think that's all going to be reversed. Not that that's central to the world, but I think protesters are going to become considered terrorists, and so it's going to get pretty ugly in my estimation.
Well, thank you for your advice and sharing with us. And you were referring to Father Coughlin in the
30s. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, one quick thing I'd like to add is I'm also afraid for our mental health, mm-hmm. individually and collectively, and what a snowball that can create.
Before you go, when you say mental health, do you mean mental health care, or do you mean our collective mental health as human beings in this country?
Well,
or both.
if somehow people got jobs and everything turned good financially, that would alleviate a lot. But I don't expect that. You know, lots of people state we're at the last stages of capitalism, and so no matter what some dictator is able to accomplish, he's not going to keep the collapse from happening in the long run.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. This is Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey.
And our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're talking about where do we go from here in light of the recent national elections. Let's speak with Cody. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil and Celeste. As one president said, the only thing to fear is fear itself.
All right.
The populace need to take some type of courage because, I mean, look.
No, I'm laughing with you, Cody, because I know where you're going, I think, and that's one of the things that hopefully our guest and us were going to get to, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of overreaction to this president. I mean, I was considered the grumpy smurf of my group.
Uh-huh.
Because I was one of the few people who wasn't too excited about Obama, because I was actually looking at what he was doing to the whistleblowers, what he was doing with a lot of these other programs, and I said, you know, he's a warm, fuzzy president, and he's doing all of this stuff. And he's making everybody feel good with his smooth voice, you know, and his amazing charm. And I'm going, you guys are falling for it. Oh, he's a good figurehead. I'm going, look, if you guys don't wake up and pay attention to what's really going on, I fear the next president is going to really hurt a lot of people's feelings, all right? And I'm one of the oddballs who said, you know, I kind of want Trump to take over. And he said, why? Because it's like dousing a large tub of cold water on someone in a deep sleep while a large predator is about to pounce on them. Okay?
Yes.
Fear may be something we want to embrace because it's a natural function of the human mind to say, hey, look, you're dealing with something right now. Trying to calm down to the level of anesthesia we had during the Obama administration, it will make everyone disadvantaged. The first caller, Sheila, she brought up the walls. True, walls can swing both ways. They can keep people out, but they can also keep people in. The last caller, people are becoming aware, but they're going through this process. We cannot allow fear. my brain's over, because it's difficult for people to actually use their cerebrums when they're in the fear process. Mind you, this is the same president elect who totally turned the Republican Party off. Don't think these politics have stopped. I really don't believe Trump has any real friends in Washington, D.C., and he's probably going to have to deal with a Julius Caesar Ides of March situation to where everyone's going to turn on him.
But, I totally agree, because he's not going to be able to do what he promised, because he's forgotten. He's part of the Republican machinery right now.
Yes, yes. And now the dog is going to have to wag the tail. And we're talking about Mr. Trump here. We're talking about Mr. Super Narcissist, who's used to looking people in the eye and saying, you're fired.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can't tell this to someone's brother's aunt, cousin, who's connected to the RNC, that you're fired, and expect there not to be any type of pushback. This is politics. This is the Beltway. So the public needs to calm down. Wake up. The cold doubts. I mean, you know, we go through that shock. You know, when cold ice water is thrown in our face while we're in a deep sleep. You go in a shock, you know. It's like you take a deep breath, you know, and you wake up and all of a sudden you see this Kodiak bear stalking you.
Well, see, the thing that I would say is that it's the government that's stalking us. It's big business is stalking us. It's not necessarily a presidential candidate, a single human being as an entity. And I think that's what people are forgetting. Yes, the Republican Party did not expect to have Trump, and they did not expect him to win. But don't think that they haven't prepared, because one of the things they did that the Democratic Party did not do was a very scathing introspection over what they did wrong in the last few elections. And we also need to recognize
the media. This is what the last caller talked about, how the media dropped the ball royally, and how NPR, I listened to all news stations. I was listening to Mike Savage back in 2006 when he was constantly pushing Donald Trump to be president. And if people understand that particular radio announcer, they get a pretty good idea of where Trump is coming from. The press dropped the ball big time, and everyone's letting, it's like when Bernie Sanders got pushed out by the DNC, no one made a big hoopla about it. And I'm going, do you guys realize the DNC is being run like the communist China? Oh, no, it's okay, it's okay, oh. And then the press drops the ball big time. Now we learn all this after the fact. You know, he's practically president now. We're getting all this information that people should have got when they were running. But they were all acting like courtiers to King Louis XIV. And now they're about to pay. What kills me is how the American public still hasn't awakened to our media and how they've dropped the ball royally on this whole thing and not giving people the necessary information to make informed decisions. All right, because everyone's in their little world.
Cody? You getting some good points, but we want to hurry you up because we got a full buffer.
I'm letting you know I'm not afraid. I'm all for waking everybody up. I'm all for Trump being president to wake people up to what's really going on in this country. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
So one of the things I think is really important as we look at this is not everybody can leave, and we may be fooling ourselves to think that we're all going to be welcome. We don't know what's in the plans yet, because just think, if a bunch of Americans with just say them a comfortable, not rich, but comfortable income, revenue stream go down to Mexico, and that's going to boost their economy quite a bit. Do you really think that the powers that be are going to let Mexico have some of our money? You know, we really need to think, because they are listening to all of the disgruntleds talk about moving. Some people are being really cavalier and go, see ya, you know, but I'm sure there's going to be some serious thoughts about, wait a minute, are we going to be losing jobs? Are we going to be losing income? Do you think the United States really wants pensions coming out of the United States Treasury going to Mexico? I don't know. And I'm not saying, okay, that to scare people. I'm saying that to make you think. Now, one of the points that Cody brought up that we didn't have time to really unpack like I would have liked to is about not being afraid. And Cecil asked people, well, what can you liken this to? Now, I'm going to say this because I'm going to prime the pump in case our guest doesn't get a chance to make it. As a person of color, and somebody who has grown up with parents who grew up through the Great Depression, the real depression, and then my father having been born in 1918, and so not that far away from emancipation. And hearing stories and spending a lot of time in the South and other places, there are a lot of folks of color who are not afraid of this. And we think, it's been bad. And a lot of people say, well, it's going to be worse now because they're not going to be afraid and they're going to come out of the closets. And when I think, yeah, I understand that. But there's been, you know, lots of traumatic violence toward people of color in the South and in the Midwest and in the West, and folks have not done a whole lot about it. What makes me think that it's going to be a whole lot worse? I mean, when you have police in various municipalities across the country shooting people, unarmed people, you know, people with mental health issues, poor people, people of color, and with impunity, you know, as far as people of color are concerned, it's about as bad as it's going to get outside of state-sanctioned slavery.
Well, I think for me, at least, this is why the historical perspectives are helpful. And first, I want to acknowledge that people who are traumatized, that's their trauma,
yes,
and it's very real.
It's so valid.
It shouldn't easily dismiss it. But also, I think our historical perspective helps us with the tools to counter what we face.
Yes.
Our first caller who mentioned Nazi Germany, and I think there is similarity around the world with what was happening today with what was happening in the 1920s and 30s. So that might give us a perspective about how we should respond. And for here in the United States, I often liken the Obama years and what we're about to is the end of Reconstruction.
Yes.
Where at the Civil War, the North won, and it was victory, and thought that somehow the white slave owner establishment would somehow fall asleep and lose power. No.
They continue to
build and continue to hold on to their resentment. And, you know, after 12, 13 years of Reconstruction, during an election, they took power back, and things became very, very bad, very, very quickly. Let's see what some other people have to say. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we'll talk to Ross. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Celeste. That's a good program. I agreed with Cody. Emphasis on not being afraid. Do not give in to fear. I think that this has been a very unusual election, and the outcome is easily described as scary. It could also be described as challenging. But before we go there, I want to remind that I think this is one of the most exciting and challenging and beautiful periods, because we have never been so close. For those people who share some of the ideals of the progressive left, we have never been so close to electing a socialist president, a democratic socialist president, and I think that counts for something. This period is not going to be just like any other period in history, although I think the comparison with the shift from Reconstruction to into Jim Crow is gives us food for thought, but I think that if people who want to who are inspired or so depressed by this period that they might want to leave the country for that reason, well, I hope I wish them well. I sometimes wonder why I'm not living in another country, because I absolutely love Mexico. I've loved living there. I would prefer living there. I'm happier living in Mexico and even in Panama. I even had experience of living in Cuba. But when I'm there, I look at this country, and I was in Mexico when Bush was elected back in whenever that terrible time was. Mm-hmm. And I was ashamed of my country, and I know this is my country, and this is where, if I love my other people in other countries, this is still where I want to be. And so I'm just hopeful that people can come around to seeing this period as a great period of challenge. Some things are getting so clear. If only the clarity that there is no automaton caricature out there of the working class that's politically conscious and always gets things right because he knows his interests. No. Yes. And so I think that we have to stop thinking in caricatures and be open for a new way of looking at things. And I'm going to say we need to start loving all of those friends who voted for Trump, trying to understand them, and stop laughing at them.
Because yeah.
I think that there's a part of us, and sometimes we hear it on the radio, even from some of the talk show hosts, God help, who are humored by and arrogantly, condescending towards a whole bulk of Americans who are if not our brothers, maybe our cousins.
It might be family members like moms and dads and brothers, you know?
Amen. And so I think if we get to know them, and the best way to get to know them is loving them, honestly, and not putting them down, and we'll discover the groundwork for the next election in 4 years. But in the meanwhile, we know there's much more that we want to do than just wait for the next election. And so I'm ready to get to work, and I'll take my vacation in Mexico when I can.
Okay.
All righty.
So thank you all. I just wanted to make my comments. I'll let you continue the discussion.
Hey, thank
great.
You.
Thank you.
Bless you.
Thank you so much, Ross. And I'm noticing somewhat of a pattern by some of our callers.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be helpful if we had some younger listeners call in.
Yeah.
To get their perspectives as well.
Well, before we do that, I wanted to say something because you said something, and I want to unpack that for folks. We're not dismissing fears, and I'm going to go ahead and unpack this other topic rather than wait. One of the things that I've expressed as a person of color is like what Ross said is a type of excitement, because I see this as a great time for bridge building and community building and to kind of really cement what community means by reaching out. Now, one of the things we need to remember, and we need to be supportive of our newcomers and our immigrants and refugees that are in this country, is that we understand that they are displaced and they are afraid and the politics seem frightening to them. But as we support them in being welcome here, we can also learn from them, because many of them, if you recall, are running from conditions worse than we have experienced in our country, in this country, on this piece of dirt. Mm-hmm. And we can learn from them lessons of resiliency. So what happens is that if hand joins hand in being welcoming and resilient, in supporting, each other, we stand to be very strong. They can teach us a lot of lessons, because they're leaving despotic governments, upturned or puppet or corrupt governments. And so they understand that fear, but they have survived. The fact that they're moving is a part of that whole survival dynamic. And so we need to think about digging in and changing. And as a person of color, both of Native American ancestry and African ancestry, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, this is my country too. I'm not giving up without a fight. So that means getting out and organizing and getting to know people better and finding new ways to create stronger community, then that's what it means. I don't want to leave what's mine, And I think about I think about how hard it is for us to see somebody else's point of view. This is a good time to be less arrogant, to be less haughty, as Ross was saying, and actually open our minds and look. I think that the overwhelming shift to Trump, I think it's being simplified. I think some of that is because people did not like having a black president. They did not want a black man to represent this country to the world. But I also think that there was a certain amount of naivete, because for Trump to bring back America or make America strong again means you're going to be an empire. You're going to be imperialistic. And that means we're going to be back in other countries, taking their stuff to be number one and make them like PO'd at us again.
Yeah. That is so certainly true. I was wondering, I forgot what I was wondering.
It'll come back.
That's not important. What is important is that we have some very thoughtful people waiting to speak. John, good morning.
Hello. I'm going to blame this all, not all, but on Ronnie Reagan and William Bennett.
Ah.
Interesting.
Destroying the educational system of this country.
Oh, okay. That's a good point.
They took out all the social... what do you call it, programs, not social programs, but like sociology, psychology.
Social studies, human studies.
So, yeah.
Humanities.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, see, there is a point for this, because once you destroy a person's history, you have other things happening. I enjoyed history when I was in high school. It was mandatory. And I remember seeing this film called The Roaring Twenties. And they had I don't know if it was Calvin Coolidge or Hoover, but they had these inaugurational parade, 10,000 Klanners going down Pennsylvania Avenue. Mm. Now, I could see January 20th with Donald Trump and his little limousine going down and 5,000 Klanners right behind him, because they're so arrogant and now so confident that they have a carte blanche of doing whatever they want to. Well, there's a white sale at JCPenney's, they'll be down there by the thousands. Second, I would look at the international situation. We're between Korea and Syria. We're really getting very, very close to something that really challenging, whether to push the button or not. Mm-hmm. We have there's this president in Korea who's the daughter of Park, who was a military dictatorship, who's goating the president of well, the dictator of North Korea. I mean, actually, oh. come on, let's go, you know. And then you're having the president of the Philippines who's going to invite the Chinese Navy into Subic Bay. Now, you know, some of these people that were running on the Republican ticket, whatever, don't even know their geography or their politics. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like, well, what was that one guy, Gary Johnson? He didn't know where even Assyria was.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's Republican light. But then the third one is climate change. There's going to be a cruise from Anchorage, Alaska to New York that's going to go clear over the Arctic Circle, because it will be completely ice-free.
Wait, stop. Yeah. Okay. I don't doubt that, because I spent a lot of time in Alaska, and I remember traveling from Fairbanks down to Anchorage and seeing the permafrost melted.
Yeah.
But so when was this decided, this cruise, and how was it promoted? I'm just curious to how commercial that venture is.
Well, I heard this on KBOO.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and... it's like one of your...
Oh, it's got to be true then.
Yeah, well, one of your disc jockeys.
Uh-huh.
They call it the parasitic class. And what it is, it's this cruise that's like $50,000, $100,000.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
But the whole thing about it, I'm just listening to some of these scientists.
Mm-hmm.
The Arctic Circle is like one of the thermostats of the world.
Yep.
And so... when you have the sun beating down on top of the Earth, that's going to heat up things. And then you have the heat coming from the equator. And guess who's in between? The Midwest.
Oh, yes.
So I just looking at national, international, and in climate. And even the most smartest president or smartest people on the earth who are in a cabinet, it would be a challenge to them. But now look what we have. You see, these people...
Well, they don't really care,
and
they'll have to deal with the fact that it's real, which means all the other lower-level climate naysayers that are the working folks like ourselves will have to accept it, too.
Well,
because it's going to happen.
This is kind of the worst thing could ever happen with this what do you call elections. And, you know, on top of it, the popular vote, you know, really Hillary won, you know that, hands down. But, look how complicated our election system is. So I can understand people's anger, but my frightening thing is just the rise of right-wing, groups coming.
Yes, definitely.
And they are being cheerleaded in by this thing that's running our country.
Well,
thanks for your time.
Wait, Cecil wants to say something.
No, thank you, and thank you for raising those points. One of the things that you mentioned and others as well is in terms of the emboldened extreme nationalist right wingers, and so it's certainly, read about this convention this weekend and such like that. I'm wondering, it's just, we're in some interesting times, that's all. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, good luck to everybody.
All right. You're listening to More Talk Radio. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We are speaking about where we are headed and how are you feeling 2 weeks after the election?
And what might you be doing?
2 weeks after the election of a new president, a new Congress, we are entering into a new era. What are your thoughts? Let's go to our next caller. Vernon, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil and Celeste. Thank you for taking my call. I think that it's important that we take a look at the big picture and step back a little bit. I mean, we are witnessing the political failure of our system. It's just politically, it's not meeting our needs. There's no question that neither Trump nor Clinton came close to representing the desires of the American people.
Yes.
They were both really high negative candidates. This is the first time in my life that both major parties nominated the person with the highest negative rating. Totally bizarre. And the elections didn't come close to representing what we believe in. Our political system has failed. But more important than that, step back and look at what's happening with our economic system. The dollar is not long as the default currency of the world, and this country has essentially no production in its economy. We're running out of resources to exploit. We've been exploiting them since colonialist days, and we're at the edge of peak everything. You know, there's virtually, it's obvious that we cannot continue to exploit the natural systems. And there, once again, step back and look at the big picture. Nature is changing very rapidly. The oceans are acidifying and rising. The climate is changing dramatically. And frankly, those climate changes dwarf everything that we're looking at. I mean, if the natural world decides that our way of life doesn't work, frankly, our political systems, even our economic systems, none of that is going to matter.
I'm not arguing with you.
Now, as far as how I respond to that, I respond to that by going outside, looking up at the sky and going, God, I'm still alive. It's amazing. The world is still working. And I'm going to make every effort to learn to grow my own food, pedal my own bicycle, and take care of my neighbors, especially the ones with guns. We have to get along. We have to survive. And it's going to come down to every single minute of the next. We've got to get to know each other.
Well, that's true. But, I got this thought about guns. And, you know, bullets do run out. You know, people are going to have to be able to make their own bullets. And when they talk about no one will be left behind out of this new agenda coming out of the UN, do people actually think that we're going to be able to continue to have all of our own armory? You know, it's like, no.
I agree with you. We need to take care of one another.
In the short term, those guys can do a lot of damage.
That's true. Well, I plan on being nice to anybody. So, yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, it's important that your neighbor with the guns knows that you're not his enemy.
True.
Okay.
It's important that he knows he can count on you when it hits the fan.
Yeah, this is very true.
All right.
So, you know, cook up some of your vegetables, take them over and share them with him.
Sounds like a plan. That's what I'll do.
And build your community.
I'll ask them to show me their guns and show their proficiency.
Well,
and learn.
To share the things that really matter.
Yeah. I mean, no tongue in cheek with that. Yes.
Thank you.
Health care. You know, we can take care of each other. We don't need professional assistance. We don't need government. We don't need all that crap. We need each other. We need our neighbors.
Thank you for your call.
We've really got to embrace everyone around us.
All righty.
If we want to pull through this.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, and we're going to embrace our next caller. Good morning, Francis.
Hello. I agree with your last caller. This is a quote. Don't be afraid. You're alive. If you were dead, you wouldn't be scared.
You wouldn't care.
This is a quote from a 12-year-old child in Syria, and he's speaking to his little brother while they're feeling and hearing the bombs. Mm-hmm. We've got a situation of overt and covert right now, and it looks like the overt won for a minute, but the covert has been around for quite a while.
Very true.
And the water hosing of the elders in the freezing cold last night is a very clear example of how extreme the hate can get.
Yes.
What bothers me right now is in the corporate media, they're giving hate a position. They speak about sides. Hate has no side and should not have a side. And that's what, as your last caller said, we need to unite against right now.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a community that is extremely international. You know, I'll be on the bus, and there may be one other European, quote-unquote, on the bus with me. The rest are from Somalia, the Middle East, Mexico, African-American, and we need to understand that we are here together. And I don't think, I heard a young rapper recently about how he likes his hate in his face, because then he knows what he's dealing with. So right now, one thing Mr. Trump has done is brought out all the haters. They're all out there showing their face, being ugly right now. I'm disappointed that he doesn't have whatever it takes in him to stand up and tell those people to stop.
He told the people at Hamilton to don't be so mean.
And he told the people via 60 Minutes, you know, stop
it. I'm talking about him actually...
Yes.
Taking the positive step to come out and make a speech to the American people saying that hate is not what we're doing here.
Well, you know,
that's what he was elected on.
And you know,
now they're acting under his cover.
I agree with you, Francis, and I think he certainly has a moment. You know, when I was a kid, I read this book, Profiles in Courage. And one of the things that he could do, and only he, would be like Nixon going to China.
John Kennedy's book.
Yeah, I know, but yes. But he would be like, the only he could do is something like Nixon going to China. He could make such a statement to those on the fascist white supremacist right to put them down. Now that would be an exercise in courage.
What's disappointing is that I don't know that he gets that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his tweets about Hamilton just sort of indicate that he's being very childish.
Well, of course, you know, that's what people voted for, and they're going to get a chance to see him at his reality.
The media needs to stop giving that. They keep talking about both sides.
But wait a minute. We're talking about corporate media here. They're not going to.
Yes.
This is what makes them their money.
Yeah, well, I don't know how they're going to get called out, but somebody needs to do that really loud and clear. But in the meantime, I truly believe that there's more and more, much more love in this world than there is hate. So all the lovers just need to stand up and be there.
Okay. Hey, thank you all so right, much, Frances. Thank you for your inspirational words of the need for love.
Amen. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye. We have been just beginning a long conversation of around what to do during the next presidency. You know, it's just amazing because this it can go wrong in so many ways. So I say, you know, if the president-elect just do 10 things he said he would do, it'll be really, really bad.
If he does part of one or two things he said he would do.
Immigration, climate change, women's rights, LGBT rights, healthcare, anything. It's just, oh gosh.
So my takeaway from this is that we have to really organize. We need to get to know everybody in our community, newcomers, people who are different than ourselves, find out how they think, and find out how to support each other. And then we need to dig our heels in and say, no, not in my country.
Well, you know, we have the opportunity. Many of us will be with family and friends this coming week. Begin the conversation there, maybe after the, if you're a meat eater, after the turkey is cut, so there won't be any sharp weapons around.
Say I love you first.
Say you. But that's where it begins, because as we mentioned, half of the voters voted for Trump, and those are people that are very, very close to us. So that's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And we'll be having more of this conversation as everything unpacks, because we need to develop strategies for resilience. We need to develop strategies to be welcoming and to stand strong and to challenge this new government for all the things that people said that Obama should have done and then did not get out and march and protest and be up in his face. This is the time when you really need to step up. Okay, this is not the time to sit back and complain and grumble, because we found that that doesn't work. You know, whether the election results indicate a true shift or whether they were manufactured is irrelevant. The fact is, we're dealing with those results right now. And the answer is for us to step up to the plate, get to know each other, be supportive of each other, and work toward that change that we see. In other words, we got to do it.
So one way you can do it, by being informed. A couple of our callers mentioned the corporate media. Here's a chance for independent media. So stay tuned here on your community radio station for more informative programs, starting with the Omo Variety Hour. I'm sorry, I just had a brain freeze. This has been Cecil Prescott for my co-host Celeste Carey. We hope that you stay well, stay strong. Have a great week.
Good morning. This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:57. Coming up is the Old Mole Variety Hour. They have post-election analysis focusing on immigration and farm workers, labor, and Trump's nomination, Jeff Sessions, for Attorney General. Chris Andre at 10 hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, host Barbara discusses what Portland can do to ensure more trees are included in affordable redevelopment projects. At 11 o'clock on Radio Zine, it's On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, How the Left Must Fight Back, Bernie Sanders, Water Protectors, and Student Walkouts. Showers likely today, mainly before 10, mostly cloudy with a high near 53. The Old Mole Variety Hour is next on KBOO.
Give to KBOO today during our end-of-year match. Starting November 1st and wrapping up December 31st, donations from all new and increasing members will be matched one-to-one up to $15,000 from the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Give an extra gift today or become a member, and your membership will be doubled to support independent community media and citizen journalism at KBOO. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Hay Fever, produced by the Portland Actors Conservatory and running from December 2nd to December 18th. In Hay Fever, the Bliss family have all invited house guests for the weekend. Artistic eccentricity and flirtation are misinterpreted and hilarity ensues. Again, that's Hay Fever, produced by the Portland Actors Conservatory and running December 2nd to December 18th. The play takes place at 1436 Southwest Montgomery Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the home page under Community Events.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. It's listener-supported community radio, and it is time now for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Denise Morris, your host for this November 21st Monday. Patricia Kohlberg is our engineer. This morning on the Old Mole, Bill Resnick interviews Larry Kleinman about Latinos organizing to stop Trumpism. They discuss the potentials long-term to go on a great offensive to make clear to all, including the white working class at every level, that we are, quote, in the same boat, brother, as Leadbelly said himself.